Okay. Sorry. Sorry, I'm a little bit late in starting. How many of you still got problems with the groups?
I can share my experience. One guy said, I'll do it on my own.
So. Right. Okay, but you still have some people left in the group. Okay, that's fine. Yeah. How many people have got too many people in their group? Well, that's good. How many people have got too few? How many? You've got two, three. Okay, three. Right. So I do not think there's any point in, this could go on forever, couldn't it? I mean, I could just, so I think what I'll do is I'll produce some clear criteria for the groups that have less than four, yeah? Which is that you only have to do the number, if your group is size N, then you have to do N out of the tasks, yeah? Of the group projects, and then you do one each of the other ones, and we grade it on that basis, because I think that's then commensurate, yeah, to the size of the group. But I'll produce that today, and I'll add it to the website, yeah? And, okay? So, and is everybody happy with that? Yeah, I think that seems perfectly reasonable, yeah? So, but I'll put that up and propagate it a bit. Otherwise, how's it going? I mean, how many of you got to the point of asking for tutorials? Aha, good. Good. Some people have asked me and I haven't replied yet, but I will do today. Yeah, so that's... I think I only got one request yesterday because I'm doing number three. So, and the other thing is I'm meeting with all the tutors today, so you should get replies about running the sessions this week. The point about the tutorials, so there were two questions I was asked about the tutorials. One of them is, what are they for? What are they for? Or how are they going to be structured? Yeah, and what ideally I want them to, the way I want them to be structured is that they're driven by your questions. Yeah, so in trying to do the particular section of the practical that the tutorial relates to, you'll come across a number of questions that you want to ask, and ideally what I'd like you to do is to send those to the tutor. And then the tutor will look at them, and the session will be focused around your problems, yeah, rather than around telling you how to do something, because the telling you how to do something bit is in the preparation for the tutorial, yeah, because in some sense you're asked to try to do some things before you get to the tutorial, and that should raise a bunch of questions that the tutorial should try to answer. Yeah? So I want them to be kind of problem driven. The other thing that somebody asked me was, if I don't feel like I've got any problems and I don't need the tutorial, do I still need to go to it? Yeah? And my answer is no, you don't. Yeah? So if you don't feel the need for the tutorial, then you don't need to arrange one. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I would say is there might be some nuances about the tutorial that you would get some nuances about the practical that you would get by going to the tutorial, but if you don't need to go to the tutorial and you don't feel you're going to get anything out of it, then you don't have to organise one, yeah? You don't have to, like, tick, you know, there aren't four boxes next to your name and I'm ticking you off and saying, yeah, they've been to that one and that one and that one, yeah? So it's any order that you want them to do them in, and provided you've done the preparation, then I'm very happy with that. Okay, any questions? Is it all reasonably clear? It's clear what you have to do, yeah? Good, okay, that's fine. So, we're about halfway through now, yeah? So we're kind of, this is about the center point of the lectures. And we've kind of reached the end of stuff about adequacy in data flow. So this is a kind of summary of where we are. So, we had some stuff about black box testing, and we had the thing about, you know, independently testable functions and the and partitioning, yeah, the category partition method. And then we've had some stuff about coverage criteria. So really, what are we trying to do with the coverage criteria? We're trying to decide what makes a good test, yeah? So we're trying to judge the adequacy of our test suite. And of course, the problem when you base adequacy on the source code is that that doesn't at all match up with the way that the thing is used operationally. So coverage is a good thing if what you're doing is you're worrying, say, about finding bugs. But it isn't such a good thing if you're worrying about how the system performs, or how reliable it is, or how usable it is, and so on. Because those things are going to depend on the usage profile. And if you don't have information about how the thing's used, then you can't expect to be doing reasonable testing with respect to that kind of thing. So can we say that some test suites are better than others? Well, yes, if we can define an effective testable adequacy criteria. So statement coverage equals one. You know, so you certainly know that if one test set has statement coverage that's higher than another test set, then it's likely that one of those is going to be better than the other, because at least you've exercised all of the code, or more of the code, in one case than the other. It may be, though, that you've not, it's not typical, or it doesn't, the one that gives you more statement coverage is actually more atypical than the one that does, so there's an issue there. But if the test doesn't exercise all statements, then surely it's no good. Yeah, so we could say that. So we might have branch coverage equals one, yeah? But, and so if our test doesn't exercise all the branches, then surely it's no good. But, well, you know that some of the time you can't exercise all of the branches in the code. Path coverage equals one. Well, you know if you've got a looping program, that's impossible. Yeah, so we don't have path coverage equals one usually. So really, what these things are is they're kind of inadequacy criteria. So it's the case that if you don't have something that's close to one, then you know that your test is inadequate, but you can't really say it's adequate. You know, and you can certainly gives you a way of comparing any two test suites that you might have. So the point of coverage criteria is really some way of uncovering when there are inadequacies in your test sets. So really, no tests are as good as we'd want, because it's always the case that you've got this open-ended environment that you're operating in, and you don't know when there's going to be a bug. And I mean, the final thing to say is, for lots and lots of systems, bugs are a long way off. Yeah. So, which is why, you know, so for very many systems, nothing much will go wrong for a long time, and then all of a sudden, some resource will run out. You know, you all must have experienced systems with storage leaks, which, if you leave them running for a long time, then at some point, in an unpredictable way, you run out of a particular resource and you can't get any more. I mean, Word does that to me, yeah? So if you leave Word running for a very long period of time, then eventually it says that it doesn't have enough resource to display the required font, yeah? And then everything goes to 10% size, and you can't open any more windows and things like that, yeah? You experienced that? Maybe none of you keep Word open for as long as I do, but if you do that, then you see those kind of things happening. So there are lots and lots of things that don't happen for a long time. So for many test sets, for most test sets, if you just look at their coverage criteria, then you're never going to get to that kind of test, something that saturates and uses up all of a particular resource. So, but what we do have is we do have this idea of subsumption, yeah, which means that if you have one, then that definitely means that you have another one. Yeah. So one test criterion will subsume another test criterion. So test criterion A subsumes test coverage criterion B, if and only if, for every program P, if every test set satisfying A with respect to P also satisfies B with respect to P. So we have this subsumption relation, and usually A appears, you have this thing where, you know, you have an A and then a coverage criterion A, and you've got a coverage criterion B. And what this means is that if you have a test set that matches coverage criterion A, then automatically that will give you criterion B. And the standard one that we have in that area, for example, is if A, I mean, an instance of this would be that A is branch coverage, and B is statement coverage. Because every time any test set that gives you branch coverage automatically gives you statement coverage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the point of this lecture is just to try and kind of talk around this kind of thing and look at, kind of finish off, if you like, all the detail on coverage criteria. So test suite satisfying B. So and a test set, if a test set here is guaranteed to find a fault, yeah, then the test suite satisfying A will also find that fault. But the criteria don't give you any guarantees. And if there's no guarantee that B will find a fault, then equally you have no guarantee that A will find a fault either. So let's review the adequacy criteria that we've seen up until now, because there's lots and lots of them, yeah? So there's statement adequacy, so all statements have been executed by at least one test. Branch adequacy, then all branches have been executed by at least one test. Basic condition adequacy, that's each basic condition evaluates to true in at least one test case and to false in at least one test case. And then compound condition adequacy, yeah, which is this idea, this is a simplistic definition, that each combination of truth values of the basic conditions must be visited by at least one test case. Yeah, so if you look at, this is too bright. If you look here, then if you look at this thing, for example, then what you want to say is you want to say that A and Y are going to both A and Y will both be true and false, and Z will be both true and false in the process of doing it. So in terms of giving the coverage of the thing here, then you have to guarantee that here, yeah, you've got X and Y is false, and then down here you've got X and Y is true. And you've got Z being false here and true here. Yeah, so it's a case of exercising all the possibilities in terms of the way that the variables are combined in the way that you build up the expression. Okay. And here, so here's looking at good definitions are important. So if you look at basic condition coverage here, and you look at this coverage, if we have x equals y equals z equals false, and x equals y equals z equals true, appears to achieve basic condition, yeah? But condition y is never evaluated in the first case, nor z in the second, yeah? So we need, for example, x equals false, y equals either true or false, z equals true, x equals true, y equals z equals false, x equals y equals true, and z equals something, yeah, you don't care, yeah, in order to ensure that all of the possibilities are actually covered, yeah. So here you have all possibilities being covered in terms of the way that you evaluate the conditions here. So you need more tests here. You basically need these three tests, and this is inadequate to achieve basic condition coverage. So it may appear to achieve it, but then when you start looking and seeing how these things are combined, when you look at the evaluation of the expression, then you see that a particular combination of sub-expressions isn't combined in a good way. Yeah. So you have to go back and look and see whether these things are satisfied. Okay. Okay, so here's talking about test suite adequacy. Yeah, so this is a, oof, we should really make this a bit bigger, shouldn't we? So here's a bunch of test suites. And I think what I'd quite like to do is I don't necessarily want to go over this, but I'd like you to have a go at doing it, yeah? And we'll talk about it next time. Yeah? So here we've got a bunch of test sets. Here we've got some coding, and you can pick it up off the slides. And for each of these statement, branch, basic condition, compound condition, coverage, we've got whether T0 gives you any of these, whether T1 gives you any of these, whether T2 gives you any of these, whether T3. So if you look at each of these, you can fill out the table. Yeah? And what I'd like you to do is look and see what you get in terms of looking at this flow graph in terms of this condition criteria. Yeah? Try and not look at Petsy and Young, yeah, on 1.2.1, 1.2.2, and just try and fill out what you think you get in terms of the coverage of each of these test cases. Because here, this is three tests. This one isn't complete. Yeah, so that's just two. That's just one test. Here you've got three tests, four tests, two there, and one here. Yeah, and just check through and see which of the blocks you cover in each case. And we'll talk about it next time. Okay. So, and if we look at test two, yeah. So test two uncovers a bug in the program, but what bug? Yeah. Anybody want to have a go? Well, we'll leave that one till next time as well, because I don't want to slow down the lecture at the moment, because I'm trying to catch up with where I should be. So branch coverage appears the same as statement coverage in T2. And then what kind of code would show branch coverage to be superior to statement coverage? We can do this one because this is a kind of general question rather than being about the specific code. So what kind of things would you need? Can you give me an example where you would have something where something would show a bug with condition coverage, sorry, we'd show a bug with branch coverage that wouldn't show with statement coverage. You've got an example. Think of something? Well, what's important about branch coverage? Yeah. So it means that you've gone along every edge. Yeah. So what I'm asking you to construct is a program, just to think about a program and a test set. It can just be a fragment of a program, yeah, where you would get from a test set full statement coverage, yeah? So explain it to me again. Yeah. So let's look. I think there's something easier that doesn't involve looping. Yeah. Just try and simplify it, actually. Yeah. Yeah, but statement coverage is, yeah, okay. So everybody knows it's going to be something to do with a conditional, yeah? So you're going to have some if and then something, yeah? Mm-hmm. So what about, okay, so I'll give you an example. Supposing
supposing I want to calculate something where I set a variable y and it's going to be equal to the absolute value of x.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yeah. Now, can somebody write a piece of code where I could have a test which would give me 100% statement coverage, but it would be wrong? You know, I could give it a test set that would give me 100% condition coverage, but what it would do is it would produce, but it would there would definitely be a bug in the code. Right, well, okay. So, if I said this, what would I put in here? Sorry?
Y equals x.
Yeah, y equals x. Okay, so this is my, and then here, down here, I get, so I get y equals x. Yeah. Okay. Now, that's my code.
Mm-hmm.
And if I say my test set is x equal to 3, so this is my test. Does it give me 100% statement coverage? Yeah. So if I draw it as a flow graph, yeah, then I've got okay. So, and if I test, my test is with x equals 3, then I definitely check that condition. I definitely do this.
Yeah.
And I get the right answer for that test.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a really stupid program, I know. Yeah. But it fails, doesn't it, for statement. There's a bug in the program. Statement coverage says that I've got 100% coverage for my code. Yeah. It's just your looping example, only flattened out to be a non-looping example. But because I never go along this arc, yeah, I never go along this branch, I never actually get to the point of seeing where the bug is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've got something that gives me 100% statement coverage. And of course, when I've got a one-line program, you can all say, well, that's a really stupid program, Stuart. Yeah, because actually it doesn't do what you want it to do. But if you think about accepting statement coverage as a sensible coverage criterion for a 100-line program, then how often do you know that this sort of thing, I mean, how often is it likely that that kind of thing is going to happen somewhere in the program? It just gets more likely as you get to bigger and bigger and bigger programs. Yeah. So that actually, it's fairly easy to construct things where statement coverage doesn't really give you what you want. And if we take branch coverage, then I know I don't get full branch coverage for this. And if I want to have branch coverage, so that gives me statement coverage. So what's a test set that gives me branch coverage? Yeah. Yeah, so there, that's something. Yeah, and then when I do minus one, that takes me around here. Yeah, and I end up with y not being assigned to anything. Yeah, I mean, and that's it. I mean, so obviously, what I need to do is I need to say something like else y equals minus x. So where you've omitted something, then quite often this kind of branch coverage stuff will force you to try something, yeah? And then if we go back, and I want you to review this because I want you to look and see. So T4 technically satisfies basic condition coverage. Yeah, but you can argue that it doesn't. So have another look there. And you can also argue that compound condition coverage is impossible for the code fragment for a similar reason. So I'd like you to look at T4 on the test suite there, and then think about enhancements to each of the tests in order to achieve compound condition coverage. What I'll do is on Friday, I'll go back over this. I want you to think about it meantime, and we'll look at the solutions to the questions. Yeah? But I want you to think about it. So can you have a look at it? What about path coverage? Yeah. So test suite T satisfies the path adequacy criterion for program P if and only if for each path P of P there exists at least one test case T that causes the execution. Yeah. And of course, there, we never get that for looping programs. And so what usually happens is there's some kind of loop boundary adequacy condition. So test cases exist such that each loop is executed zero times, exactly once, and more than once, yeah, whatever many means, yeah. So that's the way of limiting, this thing is the way of limiting the path adequacy criterion so it's actually manageable, yeah. So there you have to say, well, okay, if I look at when I execute this thing, then I have to discover if my loops have been executed zero times, once, and many times. Yeah. And then, of course, there is common sense necessary here. So some loops are always executed the same number of times. You know, so typically, you know, a for loop that starts at the base, something that initializes an array or something like that, where you start at the first entry in the array and go up to the ends, is never going to be executable zero times. Unless you can set some parameter to say, okay, this loop will be executed zero times because the array is empty, and that might be a sensible boundary condition to look at, actually. You know, so if you've got a parameter that says the size of the table is n, then it's probably useful to just look at your code when you've got an empty table, because that could very well throw up situations where you've assumed the table is always non-empty. So it's probably worthwhile looking at something like that. So here we are. So it's a little exercise. So this routine loops through the element 0 to n minus 1 of an array, stopping if it finds an element that's greater than or equal to x. And as it does so, it replaces any negative entries in A's with their absolute positive values. So what would a test suite be, yeah, in some form of suggested values for the array A, yeah, which satisfies the path adequacy criterion for this program? Yeah. Okay, so we're thinking about executes all paths, and we're thinking about using the loop boundary conditions. Yeah, so it executes the loop 0 times, once, and many times. Yeah, and also it gives us all possible paths. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So what would be a good test set for that? Let's try and do this one. Let's just shout out some tests. Yeah, and we'll see if it does it. Yeah. What's the bound? Yeah?
You have to have n 0, n 1, n 2. So we could have all the looping scenarios and also all possible positive, not negative combinations in the array. So for each looping, it's enough for 2, I believe.
Yeah, okay. So 2 you're happy with. Yeah, so. Uh-huh. And here, then we just have the A is equal to the empty array, yeah? And what that would do is it would instantly take us down here, so we'd cover this path, yeah? Okay, for N equals 1, well, how many test sets would we like there?
2, 1 negative, 1 positive.
Yeah, okay, so we'd have A is equal to minus 1, A is equal to, let's say, 1. Uh-huh.
enough for that one. And then what about for n equals 2? What would we choose there?
Four combinations, positive, negative, negative, positive.
So we'd have a is equal to 1, 1. And that takes us round all combinations, yeah? Because here we just have one possibility here. And if we unroll the loop twice, yeah, then essentially we have two occurrences of this test, yeah? And for the two occurrences of that test, then you have that either is true or false, and each of these takes you down one of them. Mm-hmm. So what we have is we've executed the loop 0 times, we've executed the loop once, we've executed the loop, quotes, many times, i.e. more than once. we've done all possible paths through the program. So this is relatively straightforward, yeah? And it's fairly easy to generate this kind of thing for this one, yeah? And so that's something that satisfies the loop boundary adequacy condition, yeah, and it covers all paths, yeah, for many being 2. Okay. So path adequacy is impossible. We know that because it unloops forever. Yeah. What about this one? What's the problem here? Yeah, this is an example where, we'll draw it and just look at the paths, because it's terribly obvious, yeah? But actually it's not always obvious. So we come here, we have a test, a smaller than 0, and here we go if we're false, here we're coming if we're true, then we have a equals 0, and then we have a bigger than 10. I do here? I'm coming here, aren't I? A bigger than 10, then A equals 10. That's true. This is false. Okay, so what's the problem with that bit of code in terms of getting statement coverage? Well, if I come this route, what's the value of A?
Zero.
If I come this route, what's the value of A? Yeah, but what do we also know about it? Yes, here we've got A is less than 0. So when we arrive here, A must be less than or equal to 0. So whenever we come to this point in the code, we have that A is smaller than or equal to 0, don't we? Sorry, greater than or equal to. Is it? Oh. Is that the right way around? Oh, I've done it wrong, haven't I? Oh, sorry, I was trying to get... Is it okay? Hang on. So here, if A is less than 0, then it gets set to 0. And if A is greater than 10, then A gets set to 10.
So it should be A is bigger than 0. And
yeah. Yeah, so it should be this one, shouldn't it? Yeah? Sorry. It's true, false. Yeah, there's a bug in this. Yeah, so if that's what I intended. So here, if we come here, then we know that A must be smaller than or equal to 0, and if we come here, we know A equals 0. So what we end up with is that this piece of code is actually unreachable. Yeah? And you see this again and again in when we look at test cases, yeah, that we can't generate a test case which is always going to take us to somewhere. Yeah? So realistically here in this case, if I get this right, yeah,
it should be, if A is greater than 0, then A equals 0. And if A is greater than 10, yeah, that's it. Yeah, so realistically, you can't have more than, you can't have 100% coverage on this particular statement,
because you get here and here and here, but you don't get to there, yeah, because you never
have the true branch. Yeah?
Isn't that supposed to be like a min-max to set boundaries? So it's, there is no L on your slide.
Yeah, there is an error.
No L.
Hmm? There's no error on the slide.
Yes.
Okay. It's correct, yeah? Yeah, but I'm trying to make a problem out of it, yeah. I'll review it and get back to you. Yeah. Okay, so data flow. So data flow criteria are concerned with this business of definition clear paths, yeah? So the context is a graph representation of the program and the vertices of the basic blocks. And we have this idea of definition use pair, and it's a pairing between where you define something and then there's a def clear path takes you from the definition to the use, yeah? And DCU is a set of vertices which use a variable x in computations, yeah? And it could be directly affected by this definition of x at node V, yeah? So there's this def clear path. So we've got this idea of you have some definition for X, and then you have some path through here, and that takes you to some different point here. We start at V, we get to V primed, and there are no assignments to X down this path. Then this assignment here could influence the value that's calculated in the expression in that vertices. And DPU is similar. But this time it's that you take a particular branch out of a branching vertex, so the thing is used in a condition, yeah, or a proposition, yeah. So here, can you identify DU pairs for C? So if we go look at C here, yeah? So where is C defined? So let me just rub out some stuff on the board here. So I've got C gets defined where? On 23, and where else? Are there any other places where C gets defined? No. Yeah? There must be somewhere else. No, okay, so it doesn't. So what are the def clear paths for C? Silence. Sorry?
All of them are def clear.
Yeah. So we go to 23 to where? Where do we have uses of C? Give me some lines. 25, yeah? Where else? 27. Anywhere else? We don't use C again, do we? So these are the two death clear paths, yeah? From 23 to 25 and from 23 to 27, yeah? Sorry? Oh, there's a 40. So what else should we have? Last. I don't see it. Where do you mean, Ali?
There's if C equals to plus, if else if C equals to. And 7 and you like 40 is the last else of any other case.
There's another else here, yeah?
Yes,
40. 40. Oh, okay. Yeah. So 23:40 as well. Yeah?
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah?
C, isn't it defined as a pointer to FTR, and at 44, FTR is increased. So basically, C is modified at 44.
Yeah. Well, but is it? No, it's not. Because you're not, you haven't changed C, you've changed E pointer, haven't you? Yeah?
Not the value of the...
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I know you're right. Yeah, so 41, yeah?
44.
No, that's changing the pointer value. Yeah? So here, yeah... Yeah, this is true that we're in a loop here, yeah? So this means at this point, C gets set to the... So here we're dereferencing the pointer, aren't we? Yeah? So C gets set to the character that E pointer is pointing to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then here, we increase E pointer, yeah? And then C gets set to a new value here, yeah? Yeah, so C definitely gets changed here, but then we're talking about, but that's the point at which it gets defined, yeah? Okay, so it's not the case that this is changing C, it's changing a value, it's changing E pointer, and then this definition here changes C, yeah?
But once C is locked to that pointer, shouldn't it follow its value?
No. Because it's not locked to the pointer, you're just getting back the character value that the pointer is pointing to. Yeah? Uh-huh. Okay? Because you're dereferencing the pointer, yeah, picking up the character. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So yeah, I think these are the things. Yeah. And then I don't want to take up too much time, but again I'd like you to look at identifying DU pairs for digit high, yeah? And identify the def predicate usage in your answers, yeah? And identify the def computation usage in your answers, yeah? Okay, and what's DCU of OK34, yeah? So if we look here, yeah? Uh-huh. Where from here do we go to that uses this OK? Anybody got any idea? Yeah, so if you look at this as a definition of OK, where does it get used?
In the return.
Yeah? So here, DCU of OK34 is 47. Mm-hmm. Okay? And what's DPU of OK20? Yeah, so we have OK20 here. Yeah, so here OK is false. So where do we use OK again? Are there any? Are there any uses of, well, what's DPU? Yeah, it's used in a condition. Does it get used in a condition? Yeah, let's look. So here we've got OK. And then I don't think we use it in a condition, do we, at all? Yeah. Yeah, there are no uses. So that's going to be the empty set. Yeah, so there aren't any uses of OK20. And what's DPU of digit high 30? Yeah, so look, we look here. Well, where do we use digit high? 32, yeah, here, don't we? Yeah? So we use it here, but we don't use it anywhere else.
36.
No, but is that, that's using it, we're looking for DPU here, yeah? So that's being, that's a DCU. Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Yeah, I think you would do. Yeah, because you want to think about the what branch it takes. Yeah, I agree. So you'd have two. Yeah. Okay, so that's the basics of data flow. But what I'd like you to do is just to go through and look and identify some of the definition use pairs in here. And we'll talk about it next time again, run through. So oh, it's 1 o'clock again. So we're nearly finished this review of adequacy criteria, but we'll finish it off and we'll talk about the solutions to the last thing. So if you can fill out the adequacy table for the little bit of fragment of code at the beginning and have a look at the definition use pairs in the piece of code, and then we'll talk about it next time. Okay? Good. We're meeting at one end of the thing, yeah. Yeah, it probably would. Well, it would depend on the compiler and it would depend on the language. So sometimes it would, sometimes it would. Yeah. But it would say something like, if it could count, well, it'd have to be a reasonably smart compiler. Yeah. So we'd have to be doing some data flow optimizations to detect that, and then it would probably optimize that code away. In which case, still when you were looking at the statement, it wouldn't give the statement coverage, but you would really effectively have coverage. Okay.